Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis World, and that is post covering finance and property news. It's Monday again, and guess what? Edwin's back for another rant. Hi, Edwin. How are you going?
Look, I'm going well. I've yet to meet one of these extraterrestrials. They're not landing in the Blue Mountains just yet. I'm sort of, I don't know what to expect. Is one of Elon Musk's, rocket ships going to land in the backyard, or is he going to get beaten by one of these UFOs? But I know you got visited by a UFO a couple of weeks ago when your roof flew off the, your shingles flew off the roof.
Well, my UFO was a bit of tree from down the road that decided to come and visit me. The good news is the new roof is almost complete. It's going to be finished today. The building inspector has to come and just certify it. So in this part of the world, you still have the council come and check that it's done right before they actually can sign it off, which is quite interesting. So it's interesting. It's taken them, 9 days from start to finish to just do the work, which is quite interesting. The putting up the scaffolding and protection over the top took 5 days. It's going to take about 3 days to take it down. So by Christmas, it'll be done. But yeah, UFOs, I'm not sure whether there's anything there. It seems to me it's like one of those things where, somebody sees something and then it goes up into social media and then it explodes and then everybody says, oh, I can see stuff too. And you wonder how much real stuff there is. And then, of course, the US government says, there's nothing to see here. We don't think about it, et cetera, et cetera. Well, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Well, I don't know.
But that's what the that's what our government says. Yeah, there's nothing to see here. Move along. Yeah, talking about building inspectors, I think they're just somewhat like the UFOs, mysterious in many ways. There's a project in Linfield that's being built at the moment. It has a shopping centre underneath, and I've got a couple of insiders that are actually working in the complex as we speak, and they were telling me three or four weeks ago. There was an inspection of the complex thus far. It's meant to be completed by middle of next year, and apparently, this is allegedly it. They picked up 130 major electrical defects within the building. It's four floors, one level of commercial, four levels of residential, and they picked up 130 major electrical defects. That with a plumbing side of things, he says he would not trust the waterproofing, as much as the roller that they used to apply it. It's an absolute sham. But now what they're going to do in terms of the building inspection, again, this is what he alleges, is that they're going to show the building inspector, wait for it, next week or the week after, they're going to show him five of the better units because everything else will just not pass the muster. Now, this is what's being built. This is what's being built. And I can assure you, Martin, a two-bedroom apartment there would be worth no less than $1.3 to $1.5 million.
Well, it's really, really interesting, Edwin, that you're talking about this because I've had quite a few conversations in recent times with people who are really struggling with apartments that they bought over recent years and are finding that there are more and more issues coming out of the woodwork. I don't know whether you saw this, but there was an interesting report, and this came out from it, that showed suburbs where median unit values have fallen the most from their peak. And I just want to dwell a little bit on this because these two things are directly related. So in Epping in New South Wales, according to the CoreLogic data here, the peak of the prices we're in May 2017, and it's fallen by 18.4%. There's also an East Melbourne example there, and then Abbotsford and Beecroft. These are big falls. And you've got to ask the question, Edwin, why is it that we are seeing these unit prices dropping so dramatically? There's meant to be an undersupply of property. There's meant to be a very high demand. And as I've been looking at this and I've been talking to some people who actually are caught up in the middle of this, it's all back to the same issue. These are really, really poorly built properties. And the amount of costs that are now being piled on, particularly through the various charges coming from the Strata Committee is making it harder and harder. And of course, also, a lot of these properties were pretty much cookie cutter, and then they built some more down the road and some more down the road and some more down the road. So you've got ununique properties with really, really bad quality of construction, more defects surfacing. And it's not surprising that the prices are falling, but people are losing money hand over fist as a result of this. And this is not a story that is actually being told. And this is part of a much bigger set of scandals about building inspections overall, in my view.
Well, look, it is. And this is, I mean, it goes back to the late 1980s when the industry was deregulated. And from then, everything just went downhill. So now we are where we are. I mean, post that, there were two sit downs with the state government to discuss the deregulation of the industry, and they both failed to put out any positive notes or notations with regard to the progress. But guess what? After the second one, we're here again. So we're doing the same thing over and over again, except this time around, things cost a lot more. There's a greater push to get people, the young people in particular, into the high-rise developments. There's a greater push with your big complex syndicates that are looking at your build to rent scenarios. You've got the building cartels that are coming into a country to cram young families into dog boxes, but if you look at it, so that's the nature of the high-rise developments across most areas of Sydney that I've said for quite a number of decades, that in most parts of Sydney, nothing above four levels should be built, and nothing should be dug deeper than one and a half basements. I mean, if you look at historically, if you look at the landscape of Parramatta CBD, most of the older complexes there, the commercial complexes there, they were, at worst case scenario, they went down one basement, let's say, which is about 3-4 meters deep, and everything else was in relation to parking was built above ground level. So you had two or three levels of parking before anything else was built on top. I mean, that was the nature of it. Or you just simply went to the nearby parking station, which is above ground. But then all of a sudden we got this notion that we've got to dig 3 or 4 basements. There are complexes in Parramatta that were in joint venture agreements with the local government and dodgy developers, that they dug further than they were supposed to, when the geotech reports only provided a report to two and a half basements, and they actually dug 4 basements. And to this date, they don't know how to take the fumes out of the lowest basement, because you can't use electrical ventilation. Electrical motors, because they're just not powerful enough. You've got to use diesel generators in order to ventilate the lower floors, but you can't use them because that defeats the purpose once again. So you're caught in this quagmire of corruption, red tape, but now you know what the worst is yet to come, you're going to see a further deterioration of the building standards, not the building code. The building code, as we've been reporting, was changed. In order to make it better, then they brought in the building commissioner. But at the end of the day, Martin, the New South Wales government, like many other, obviously, state governments, as well as the federal, they've got deadlines, they've got promises to keep, which they will never keep. We're running 30 currently. This year, we're running 30% below what should have been built. As we spoke about it in early 2023, we said that 2024 was going to, the figures for completions were going to be a lot lower than 23, and here we are. So it's so much so, except it's almost like it now has the rubber stamp of approval, because everything has to be fast-tracked, because guess what? There's an election coming on, right? And the young people are the ones that are going to vote the current governments out because they're the ones that are suffering the most, in my opinion. That's my personal opinion. They're the ones that are suffering, and also no different to Victoria. Policies that have absolutely wrecked the property arena there. Now, I know some are saying, well, it's a good thing the property prices are going down, but why aren't the people that what the young people that are looking at buying, or the young families that are looking at buying, or people that are looking at buying in Melbourne, why aren't they buying them? And that's because these things were built in areas where young families and young people don't want to go and travel.
Yeah, when so you just were talking there about the young families and younger people really being caught out. I just want to directly relate that to this particular little juicy little bit of commentary. Of course, we had the government basically saying we're not in the business of seeing house prices lower. This was pretty amazing. Amazing. They want house prices to continue to go up and get more unaffordable. As this particular person lost me as a voter. This was quite a big revelation. This last, although actually it's a little bit of an old video from Triple J. But this was a pretty shocking conversation, and it's really got huge amount of viral reporting. The government doesn't want prices to fall. Surprise, surprise. And the fact that she's thrown youngsters under the bus.
Well, if we only had one topic to talk about, Martin, this is it. This encapsulates everything that we've been saying for since 2019, and that is the economies. We can't look at the property, the economic part of the property arena, the property market, like we did pre-2019, post the last election, because as we said back then. It's two wings of the same vulture, and whether it's the Labor or whether it's the Liberal, we don't know who's in control, because there's neither of those two parties are in control. It's somebody outside of that that's in control. We don't know what the main body is that is controlling the party, because but they both don't want property prices to go down, and this is why we've honed in on actual numbers on the ground, actual numbers in different markets of Sydney. What is happening with the demographics across Sydney, with the polarization of the communities? Who's got the appetite to buy? Who's got the appetite to let go of property, such as what we've seen the WeChat chatterers do to the market in Victoria? And it's almost like a week by week, what month by month event in order to keep up. If you're looking at things from a historical point of view, yeah, there's some relevance, but not a lot, because everything from 2019 just changed, and it's evolving, and the pandemic is fueled everything the government control. So to the point now where we're talking about government controlling the RBA and God knows what else. That's what I'm saying, Martin. It's yes, I'm not saying that historically there is no significance with the economy, and there is no significance with what happened with the property arena, but unless you're prepared, if you're only going to be prepared to look at it with one lens, you're behind the eight ball. You've got to look at this the property arena, the property market, with many lenses. And this was just what do you call it? Saying the it's now in your face. They're no longer hiding it, Martin. They're just no longer hiding it. And people are going to have to wake up and get used to it. Immigration isn't going to come down, as we spoke about in the last few episodes of the rant. They just changed the names, and they just changed the visa numbers, and booyah, that's it. It's only until 3 6 months later that people find out, oh shit, it's still the same numbers, and but it's just a name change and a number change, and but it's the same same old same old.
Well, and it is interesting to reflect. I showed you that earlier chart, right, where I showed that the price falls had actually happened. Shh, don't tell anybody. Look at these. It's quite widespread, mostly units, but even places like Harris Park and Parramatta, and Guildford, prices are down. So you could argue maybe that the government's policies, therefore, of keeping prices up hasn't worked. Also, of course, there are some boom places. So property booms for towns in northern New South Wales. Since COVID, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Tweed Heads have taken off. But then you look the other side here. You know, here's some barefoot investor saying that not everyone is making a killing on property, with somebody in Docklands losing considerable amount. And in fact, James Kirby also said, watch out, distressed properties are on the rise. Distressed property sales have rebounded across major cities. But despite the deterioration, there's significant evidence of property weakness showing in the bank results just yet. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. And look, the bottom line is, Edwin, that it is, of course, very hard to call what's going to happen. We've got all of these countervailing forces. But when the government comes out and says, no, we have no intention of allowing property prices to fall, that's a political statement more than anything else. And what they've done is to throw young people under the bus once again, because it's going to be harder and harder and harder for young people to be able to get into the property arena. And the whole concept, by the way, I think the property ladder concept is overdone. You know, this idea if you get on and then you can sort of step up. That is an illusion, and it's based on this concept that prices can only ever go up. The government will only ever support property to go up. Now, it may be the case, but it's going to be more and more expensive for the government to do that, at a time when the MIEFO, which is coming out on Wednesday, is going to say that they're going to have huge, huge, huge pressure with regard to the budget. The fact is that the government is having to spend a lot of money, a lot more than they expected. They're now forecasting the revenue and tax take from the resource sector to fall over a cliff, $100 billion over the next 3 years, I think, is their latest drop. So it's going to be harder and harder and harder for the government to be able to sort of keep these sort of forces going up. So I think more than ever before, people really need to be careful that they don't get swept up in this property story, and really, really, really go into the detail and really, really, really know what you are buying, because we've already shown some prices are higher, some prices aren't higher, that some people are losing, some people are winning. And when I talk to people from a one-on-one perspective, more and more people are getting more and more twitchy about this whole thing. And then, of course, in this sort of context, when you look at individual property, you need to be careful about even the documentation that you look at about that property too, because actually there's another story to tell here too.
Yeah, look, 100%, Martin. And this is where when they lump everything into one pot, you lose the essence of, you know, of what's really happening. So in light of values of properties, when you put all in a melting pot in Parramatta, Harris Park, Westmead, Wentworthville, all these. Yeah, that Parramatta, sort of, like, let's call it the LGA, and the outskirts of the Parramatta there. You do a comparison of the brand new apartments. There are two bedroom brand new apartments in high rise developments that are selling for $1.2 million off the plan, and the government make it a lot easier to buy that. For young people to go in and buy that. Dog box in the sky with a lot of future issues and a money pit, than they do to buy a unit or in a unit complex that's say 20, 25, 30 years old, which again a lot of value. And this is what comes back to, as I was sharing a couple of weeks ago with regards to helping one of my daughter's boyfriend buy a property over in an apartment over in Westmead. Bigger floor plan, less units in the complex, more owner occupiers in the complex, better strata report than any high rise development around the area. So I know a couple of developments there in near the river, where the developers are willing to drop $200,000-$250,000 per unit, or even $300,000 if there's enough, if there's enough people wanting to buy in one go, because he's desperate. to sell, but you wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole, Martin, regardless of the fact that they're selling the one across the road for, as I said, for $1.2 million. I could get ones literally across the road from the $1.2 million complex for anywhere between 700 and 750,000, and you get a better view of the river. So, but you wouldn't touch them. You wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole, and you wouldn't put your worst enemy in one of them either. So, but then 5 minutes. And literally 5 minutes from where these apartments are located was the apartment that I bought for my daughter's boyfriend. That cost 400. We got it for $465,000. And guess what? It's 15, 17 years, the complex 17, 18 years old. And yeah, it needs a bit of a refurb, needs a bit of elbow grease, but hey. You can do that over the next few years. Now that makes more sense than buying something that you're going to pay $1.2 million for, and then 2, 3, 4 years down the track, it's only worth a million or thereabouts, because there are other complexes now springing up all over Parramatta because of these rent to build scenarios and the government push to build more high rise. But so we, as you said, when you look at the unique. Or when you look at it, when you spread it out, when you look at it more with a microscope, you look at where there's value for money. I can tell you now that older apartments, right up to your red brick, yellow brick apartments that were built in the late 60s, 70s, that they're still going. They're starting to pick up momentum because they're in more desirable areas, less congestion, further away, a little bit further away from your CBDs, your commercial CBDs. But they provide a better lifestyle, Martin. They provide you're not you don't have 30 other floors on top of you. The common areas are a lot cleaner, and this is all about lifestyle. This is part of lifestyle. You're a little bit further away. People have got to do a little bit more exercise and walk a little bit further to the railway station, or catch public transport to the railway station, or to the to commute wherever they want to go. But hey. Do you prefer to pay 1.2, or do you prefer to pay 465,000 just because it's nice and new and shiny, or do your ass, or have the potential to increase in value? Because they've got to the lower price point has got to come up, rather than as much as the higher price point's got to come down as well. So that's on the one side. But the interesting thing, as you say, Martin, is this manipulation by the governments. It's, I can tell you now, from a banking side of things, and from a government side of things, it's easier to go and buy a $1.2 million apartment as a first home buyer than it is to buy a $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 apartment that's 20, 30 years old.
Absolutely. Yeah, the whole thing is rigged, and it's rigged in a way that is supporting the banks to lend ever more. That is effectively supporting the construction industry. Although, of course, we'll come on in a second to the fact that there probably aren't enough builders to build all this stuff. But just on the issue of if you are looking at a property, particularly if you're looking at an older property, then you absolutely must do your due diligence on the way in. And this is another very important point. And it takes us to another. It's part of this puzzle, right? This property puzzle. But if you look at a property, and then you get the vendor's building inspection report. Remember, we've said before, this is a marketing document. This is part of the sale process. This is nothing objective. But you've got an amazing story here, and it's worth just, I think, abutting it directly onto this conversation. Do your due diligence, because if you don't, then, well, you get messed up, as this particular post that you've put up shows.
Yeah, this is the interesting thing. This is and this isn't a cheap property. First time buyers, I think they're first time buyers, but we didn't represent these buyers, by the way. There's no way in hell I would have paid what $1.8 million for this. No way in hell I would have got anywhere near it in the first place. And there's no way that we would have been duped by accepting the vendor's report. And this is a warning to our viewers and our followers, and something that our viewers and our followers need to share and share far and wide with all the friends, relatives, neighbors, and a few enemies along the way as well. Because there's a thing as caveat emptor, buyer beware. But how How do you, is a caveat emptor, as I put on a previous post, is a caveat emptor, or is it collusion, or is it manipulating the documentation in order to benefit the vendor? Is it non-disclosure of material fact? Because this building report, when I read its entirety, I actually read the building report from that from those before you bid and before you buy organizations. I wouldn't trust them. And we got to get our viewers and followers to share that not to take these building reports on board, not to accept them, because they are not a third party or arm's length report. They're actually making a lot more money than they would if they were engaged by one individual. I won't go into the details of that. And I think it's the biggest con job that's out in the apart from, and it's probably it sits above, in my opinion, right now, it sits above the non-committed buyers, the agency using to participate, your dummy bidders, and it's because people because they see it on a as a report, they see the building report title on the front page, they believe it to be legit, they believe it to be in their favor, you could say, but it's actually contrary to that. So because they've been commissioned by the selling agent, they've been commissioned by the vendor, and yes, you pay for it, but at the end of the day, these people that participate in this before you buy, you formerly known as before you bid, reports, they're actually making a lot more money. And they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them, because the agents aren't going to call them in order to provide these reports. And it's a competitive world out there, Martin. And I can tell you now, and we spoke about it before, we said that one of our building inspectors, one of our better building inspectors, he will, he's pressed to do three on a very good day. And if he's, on a very good day, he may do four, but which he says that means that he'll have to stay up till 11, 12 o'clock at night, writing up the reports, right? But some of these characters from before you buy, they can do up to 9 to 10 reports in a day. What does that tell you? They're not spending the adequate time in the building, and they're certainly cutting a lot of corners. And as I say, they are not there. They're not favoring you with the buyer, but it's this false sense of security, and people go out and bid all sorts of crazy. That's the best part of the house. That's nothing compared to that's on the in the roof cavity. That's nothing compared to what's happening in the subfloor area. And if they follow me, if they want to see more, I've posted some more videos of the property, the same property on my X feed, so they can. But again, yeah, you can only put so much on there, and you can only warn people so much. But at the end of the day, don't fall for it. People just need to be more aware and commission your own, especially if you're going to pay silly money for a house. You want to make sure. The crazy thing is that the inspection report said that there was no structural issues whatsoever with the house. I found. But and I mean, I didn't go as far as building inspectors go, but I found three major structural defects where the carpenters had to brace the walls in order to to change the plates of the frame and a couple of the bearers.
Yeah, and just to underscore that these costs are huge to rectify these issues. They're huge. And I've had a number of conversations through my one-on-one series with people who, the best will in the world, thought they'd done the right thing. They thought that they'd actually taken into account all of the issues. They've got the vendor-driven report on the property, and they used that to help sort of calibrate what they were going to buy. But then they were completely hijacked by not just minor repairs and minor maintenance, but these are huge, huge additional costs that they never saw coming. And that, for me, is the critical issue. Now, if you read the small print in these reports, then the agent and actually the surveyor, although I put surveyor in inverted commas sometimes, really can just walk away. And you end up with a huge bill that you've got no recourse, no comeback, unless you go down a very complicated legal route to try and prove malfeasance on the way through. You don't want to go near it. So you have to get your own survey report done. And, you know, I was a building surveyor for years and years and years, and a full structural survey would take me 3-4 hours, perhaps a little bit more than that, plus writing it up. Even a slightly more superficial survey, which was looking around for the main defects, would take an hour to an hour and a half. But some of these guys just take 20 minutes to just go around and to, you know, kick the tires, take a few photographs and bang it into a pro forma report and then say, there you go, nothing to see here. Well, just be careful.
Well, the scary thing is since 1989, when that industry was deregulated, now you've got anybody from candlestick makers to bakers and IT people that have transitioned from those fields to become building inspectors, not knowing what to really look for other than what they get taught and they regurgitate. As you said, you've got pro forma documents that get given to them by the different organizations that they join. And that's the problem. That is the problem that we're facing now at a larger scale. We're also facing that construction. Now, the Building Commission has tried to put a stop to it, but it's too big. It's too big. When I say it's too big in the sense that it's too much weight for an individual to try and change the direction or the course that this ship that is driven by the government is being powering on all 12 cylinders, and on two engines, one on the starboard, one on the on the starboard, wherever they put those bloody things, and they're running at full ball with the supercharged and turbo, because there's an election coming on. Not only that, but in order to win brownie points, and they're not doing it because of course the obvious. You've got more people coming in, and we've got to import more people. No different to your part of the world now, Martin. Your part of the world is in the same need that we are. We got to import. I think your government there has promised 1.5 million. They're very, very ambitious. At least our government's only promised 1.2 million homes.
Well, it's the same. It's exactly the same issue. So they're sort of holding out, this idea of we'll build more properties. They're talking about reducing the planning constraints and trying to actually get more high-rise built. But of course, it's the same issue. They can't get the labour. And it's quite interesting. You're making some comparisons between the UK and Australia. The story is the same. In Australia, Australian housing construction is dead as a dodo, according to a recent report. The new detached home sales are sort of pretty weak as well. There's a huge, huge gap between the political waffle and the political promises about we're going to fix this, blah, 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 and reality. Reality is, you don't have the expertise to build. You don't have the economic basis on which to build, because a lot of the high-rise development that you're looking at the moment, the only reason that it can work is if you go to the build-to-rent model, where, of course, they can actually attract more aggressive rental returns than for affordable housing. None of this is tackling the fundamental issue, which is that property is way, way too overexpensive relative to real ordinary incomes. And in fact, there was an interesting article which I saw, which just made a point that, if you do the math today and work out what you actually need to be able to buy an affordable property, if you go back 20 or 30 years, it was 3 times the average income for the property, right? That was roughly it. Now it's sort of 8 times or thereabouts. And so that means, according to this article, you need $200,000 now rather than the $80,000 that you used to need just to buy, you know, a typical property. And this is the problem. We've actually got to the point now where, with the best will in the world, ordinary people cannot afford to buy ordinary property. And this is the failure of 30 years plus of bad policy from governments, and that includes the deregulation of the financial system, it includes the tax breaks for property investors, it includes high migration, it includes the outsourcing of the building and construction control systems to the private sector, and it includes the bringing in of low-quality materials and low-quality construction techniques into the country too. All of those things together, plus stupid planning rules and a massive amount of fee take from some of the local authorities. It's all part of the problem. And we've ended up with this massive problem of housing not affordable for ordinary people. And yet governments are effectively playing around the edge, not actually wanting to tackle the underlying issues because it would be too complicated. And then, of course, ahead of the election, they'll be throwing out a bit more money here, there and everywhere to try and actually get re-elected. This is a huge, catastrophic policy failure over more than 30 years. And by the way, it's not just Australia. It's happened in the UK. It's happened in New Zealand. It's happening in most other Western countries too. So there's a whole set of things that were done that have actually now led to this train wreck that we've got. Nobody wants to fix it, though.
No, nobody wants to fix it, but we end up paying for it because we pay more in taxes. We pay more in by way of costs, and obviously those costs are inflationary, and we end up paying higher taxes as well. The committees to try and solve the problem get bigger. The pay packets get larger. And there's more teams, more government teams across all three sectors, local, state and federal, that are required in order to, think tanks that are required to put together solutions to solve the problem when they themselves are part of a big part of the problem. But on top of that, going back to the construction and what we're all about, is 32 to 42% of costs post the purchase of the land to a developer is levies and taxes and all sorts of imposts. So that's 32%. Now on top of that, which I've been very vocal about for 2.5 decades, is the agents' fees. And those that moonlight as real estate agents, your financial planners, your mortgage brokers and accountants, not all, but quite a number of them, that moonlight as real estate agents and they cop a 5 to 8% fee to sell new. And there's the big push, and it's easier to buy something new than it is to buy something that's established already there, because the government makes more money, more is payable in stamp duty. Everybody wins, Martin. Everybody wins. You build, let's say 120 dwellings. I don't want to call them homes. You build 120 dwellings on 1200 square meters. When in the past you would build, 30 years ago, you would build at the most, you would build there, four, or maybe if you really want to squeeze it, like they did over in St. Mary's, you'd squeeze six townhouses. But it's still a lot better than having 120, dog boxes, one on top of the other, in the same block of land. So this is why, because it's everybody eats from the trough. And as I keep on saying, you can't, the government won't go cold turkey on the stamp duty, and it's watch this space. As I said on posts on my ex feed, as I said, 2025 is going to be the year of the silent tiger, because if you thought the WeChat chatterers gave the locals a run for the money over the last 15, 20 years, we'll wait until you see the amount of money that's coming in from India, and that's going to come in from India, Vietnam, and also Indonesians are eyeing out the higher markets of the eastern suburbs.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we'll touch on that in a second. I want to just highlight one other little juicy a little point here. You know, talking about people making interesting property decisions. Did you see this? Alba, of course, has now got a tenant for his Central Coast property, right? The two-story mansion was sold in 2021 for 4.65 million. They've now let it out at $1,500 a week. That's a property yield of 1.82%. That doesn't sound great to me in terms of economics. And it's an interesting observation that, and I see this all the time with my yield analysis. I did some analysis quite recently that showed that more and more people are losing money on their investment properties. So again, the truth is that a lot of investment properties aren't actually washing their face and getting very poor returns. Remember, that's a gross yield. That doesn't include all of the costs of the property, et cetera, et cetera. But talking about the next wave, there are going to be more people coming to Australia. The other side of it, of course, is some of those could be, well be subcontractors. And Bob the Builder, I thought this was really quite amazing, right? That, Bob the Builder, a very reliable source of information, highlighted the fact that some of the Indian subcontractors, they're great, but do they have the skills? And what's going to happen in the next 10 years?
Well, this is our insider HIA, right? And this is in the building industry, and this is something that I've been talking to him and I've been talking about for a while. So you've got, no different to your neck of the woods. You've got to import the builders. We've got to got to import. That's what they're saying. The governments are saying yours and ours are saying that we've got to import them because allegedly there's nobody in Australia that could build. So obviously we're starting to see the evolution at a and starting to be more and more apparent. I mean, it didn't just happen yesterday. It's been been rolling out, but it's going to become more and more apparent. And he says, look. In my conversations with him, he says, look, Indian contractors are a big thing on in the last two projects that he's been working on. And I can tell you now, the last two projects that he's been working on, they are major projects. We're talking, close to $300 million-$500 million each project that he's been on. In the last two jobs I was on, and absolutely no Australian standards. In other words, the people no matter what part of the world they come from, that ain't. He checks on the standards. He checks on the quality. You could say he's pretty much in the area of quality control for the construction that goes on, and he'll pull things down even if they're almost completed. He'll pull them, get them to pull it down and start again because he's very anal about the standards meeting the requirements that are that's his job. So he has a hard time with it. So then I started reflecting on that because I believe it took us close to 15 years to train the Chinese migrants that were coming in into the that made up the majority of the subcontractor labor workforce in the building industry in Sydney, and that hence the reason why we got massive amounts of high-rise development all around Sydney, and a lot of it was based on. On the shoulders of the Wechat chatterers, the labour force there, but we lost them. We lost the majority of them. We lost 60, 70%, perhaps even 80% of that workforce after we've been training them, or they've been trained over the last 15 years. So now we've got a different dynamic, Martin. We've got a dynamic where. How long is it going to take to now train the new participants in the building industry that we're importing predominantly from India? And this is where people have got to pay real close attention. And this is what you don't listen, you don't hear the mainstream media or read in the mainstream media. And that is the dangers of what we're going to walk into. Hence, you could say, I'm still calling a further rise in the house prices across Sydney markets, that's freestanding homes, that is, because there's not a lot that's going to be built over the next 5 years. And when people wake up to the fact of how crippled our construction industry is. You can only then you start putting two and two together, and there you have it. So this is what he says, and this is what really stuck in my head, and I wanted to share with our viewers tonight was, don't know, but if we lose another 10 years, there won't be anyone training the kids, meaning our local apprentices, and then you're stuffed. Because in 10 years, a huge percentage of tradies will retire. And I'm talking about the seasoned tradies. Tradies that literally did their apprenticeship here as youngsters throughout the 80s. They're due to retire now. And there goes your workforce. And then what? Then how are we going to continue to build these high-rise dog boxes if we can't build them now with the labor force that we have? And there are very little controls. My guess is, Martin, it's going to go back to institutional builders, and obviously high-rise Harry is going to be one of them. And those workforces are going to be highly paid workforces. But then you're going to be paying through the nose as well. And as I've said before, it won't be any surprise how much more the government now, presently, and in the future, will contribute in order to continue to build. Because what other choice do they have? If you keep on importing, you got to keep on building. I take it that everybody needs a roof over their head, but that doesn't mean that we have to house the rest of the world. But hey. We seem to be on that path.
Yeah, well, migration will stay high. I think it'll be interesting to see what the MyEFO says about that when it comes out later in the week. Now, just as we're coming into the show, everyone, we'll briefly touch on the numbers. It's worth saying, of course, that at this time of year, the numbers don't actually mean that much because, of course, a lot of people are away, et cetera, et cetera. But not surprisingly, the listings are down. So on the 9th of December in Sydney, 18,424. Following week, 17,273. We can also see from your chart there that the listings are tailing away, still above last year, but easing over the Christmas period. Of course, the question will be what happens in the spring. If you look at Melbourne, 29,613 a week ago, compared with 28,282. So there's still more on the Melbourne market than the Sydney market. That's consistent. And in Brisbane, 3,916 last week, compared with 3,580 this week. So that's all pretty consistent. Auctions, of course, going off the boil now, as you'd expect over this period of time. And on the rental side, on the 9th, 15,574 in Sydney, 14,827 the following week, compared with Melbourne, 13,325. And on the following week there, 12,766. So this is now showing, all of the signs of a slowing, easing period. But boy, what's going to happen in the next few months as we move into summer and into the autumn selling season? Going to be really interesting.
Yeah, look, it will be interesting for next year, and obviously that Trump effect theory is going to be tested, but yeah, pretty much into the first quarter. But hey, I like to blow that trumpet, so I'm gonna I'll continue with that. I think there'll be a bit of a skip, and people will come out. Look, the cryptanians and those that have been winning out in the stock market, that will feel emotionally, they're going to be feel that now's the time to jump in because of all the stories around the doom and gloom and also the stress sales and this and that and the other. But and I feel that this is they're going to strike, and this is why. Look, I call it on a month by month and a week by week, month by month, because it's because you look at the emotions, you look at your Tom Panos indexes, you look at every single point. and who's making the decision, who's buying, who we're talking to, what are the other agents saying. And as we've been saying for a very long time, the thing that you and I have understood for a very long time is that most people don't make rational decisions when they buy property, particularly if it's a personal place of residence. The decisions are made on more of on emotion than they are on rationale and logic. And this is what we're trying to teach our followers and our viewers. Obviously, our followers and our viewers are way ahead of the rest of the pack, and they're very, very informed. But and this is what influences the market. It's the emotion, the stories. So you've got a lot of stories about distressed stocks, numbers up, this and that. So the desperate housewives are going to push the partners that have made a mozzarella out of the cryptocurrencies of late and the stock market, and they're going to say, hey, as you said, Martin, you can't live in a you can't live in a Bitcoin, and you can't live in a on in an EFT. You need a roof over the head. But this is look, all jokes aside, over the last 3 4 weeks, most of the inquiry that we've had, this is and again, this is just anecdotal, most of the inquiry that we've had are from individuals that we know that have made a good deal of money out of crypto and in the stock market and are jumping in. And a lot of these people, a lot of these clients, the majority of the clients, they're not looking for your first homes at King's Park or St. Mary's or Mount Druitt. They're looking at $3, $4, $5 million properties, Martin. So this is why, we've got the unfortunate thing is the unfortunate thing is the immigration intake and the demographics that are coming in, the people that are coming in are gravitating towards those million-dollar homes, those price points from your 900s to your 1.5s, and it's really putting our local first home buyers behind, I said, behind the apple. That were the sacrificial lambs. So it's really topsy-turvy out there, and people just got to be tread cautiously and tread lightly when you're out there. And if you do want to go out, if you do want to go out, and I've always said that the end of year is one of the better success stories that we've had over the years, both from personal purchases for family and friends, as well as for clients. We've had the better part because not so much because these the distress or because the stock market, it's because the desperation of selling agents to sell something so they can have they can crunch their client and they can have a good commission, to buy Christmas presents for their family and friends. That's the nature of it, Martin. So again, it's all emotion. You work. You make the selling agent work for you. Get him emotionally involved. Flag the deposit in front of them, and you could get yourself a great deal.
Yeah, well, we'll see, Edwin. Just a quick take on AMP here, who's now bought into crypto for the first time. AMP has invested $27 million in Bitcoin, the first major superannuation fund to buy into the asset class. So that's one take. My other take was this one, the Lord Mayor of Brisbane warning that this is going to be a summer flood warning there. So, be careful. I can hear my builders working in the background. And just as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, you have a rather interesting a little warning for people with regards to what's going on in New South Wales over the Christmas period.
Well, look, it's is it a warning? Is it an awakening? Is it a realization that the New South Wales state government is could be just as broke as the Victorian government? Crashman puts up there the the fact that now it's going to be a 2 week blitz over the 13 days of double demerits. I mean, that's insane. What happened to double demerits, on the 24th and 25th, right? Now all of a sudden we're going from the 20th all the way to the 1st of the of January. Dear Lord, talk about revenue raising, and this is what I'm saying. We're paying, we pay through the nose to keep up with the expenditure of the governments and the bad policy of many decades, and here we are. So what next, Martin? Are we going to roll into the personification of what they have, or the realization, or we're going to duplicate what they have in Singapore, where we're going to, our certain number plates can drive, certain vehicles are registered to drive on Monday to Friday, peak hour or certain hours of the day. Other number plates are able to drive on Saturday and Sunday, and so forth. And if you want to drive all week, I mean, you pay through that. I mean, that I can just see it's just around the corner. That's next, because and if you have anything above four cylinders, you're going to be slugged a further, a further tax. I mean, this is where we end up paying for it, and then makes it a lot harder to buy something, a lot harder in a lot further away to buy something that further away from that great Aussie dream, or even, if your dream isn't to buy a house, but to rent somewhere comfortable, somewhere where you can have peace, and a good lifestyle, that becomes harder as well, and you got to go further. Why? Because of the cost of living. And then you get to a point where I say the further away you move from the commercial hubs, the more expensive it is to get old.
Yes, absolutely, Erwin. Well, we are interesting times, and I think the end of this year and into 2025 will be ever more interesting. But people need to, be careful about what they do and make good decisions rather than bad decisions. Unfortunately, I do still see a lot of people making really, really bad decisions, and they're driven by, the expectation that it's going to be easy. I think that the next few weeks and months will be quite difficult, and we'll be back next week to do another little bit of a rant just before Christmas. Look forward to that. And we should do something at the end of the year as well, because of course this last year has been quite a significant one. So we should review that right at the end of the year as we get to the beginning of next year as well. Edwin, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today. And we had a couple of glitches with the internet, but I think we got through it. So look forward to seeing you next week.
Always looking forward to seeing you, Martin. You take care of yourself.
Cheers. Bye-bye.